Okay, I'll go ahead and go through the instructions one more time, and then we'll get started. My name is Brian. I'll be the administrator for the hour today. My email address is editor@marketingexperiments.com if you have any questions or problems with the URL. The notes page is mecgroups.com/mec_research_log. One more time, that's mecgroups.com/mec_research_log. We'll be adding 4 or 5 tables and some other notes to that page, and as we add each one, we'll ask you to refresh your page by either hitting F5 in Internet Explorer or the actual refresh key on your browser. Some key commands that you might find useful: *4 will increase the volume on your line if you're having any trouble hearing. *6 will mute your line, which is will be useful if you're in a noisy room. We'll stay in lecture mode for most of today's call, as we expect it to be very full. But if we do open the lines up for questions and you think that your room noise might be audible, you may want to hit *6 to mute your line at that time. You can read a brief biography of Dr. Flint McLaughlin at the bottom of the notes. And at this time, I would like to introduce Dr. McLaughlin, who will be today's primary presenter.
Okay, Brian, I appreciate it. And our topic, as you know today, is price testing. Do you know how to price your products or services to achieve the highest revenues? And our research suggests that you may be surprised and not really know the answer to that unless you test it. And so we're going to begin here in just a few moments. Brian, have you announced upcoming research? Have you mentioned what we're going to be talking about in our next briefing?
I believe our next briefing will be on customer service, and that we'll also be having a clinic on that in 2 weeks.
Let me point out for those of you regarding that customer service clinic, it's going to be releasing some fascinating research. We went in and conducted research on how to turn customer service from a cost center into a revenue center. And essentially, we wanted to not only optimize customer service to improve retention, but we speculated on various ways that we could generate revenue through customer service. From those speculations, we developed a test approach, and then we implemented those testing in a live customer service department with our personnel on site testing and monitoring results. And we've finished working through the data sets, and it's really quite amazing. And that's what we're going to be talking about in the next conference and in the next clinic. But for today, I have to begin by asking which will generate the most revenue, a lower price that drives more traffic and buyers, or a higher price may attract fewer buyers, but possibly deliver more income per sale. Our testing indicates that the answer to those questions is, of course, it all depends. And in this brief, we're going to go through 3 separate experiments. 2 we'll focus on today, show you how a lower price can beat a higher price and vice versa. And candidly, I'm going to touch an area that I think is one which on the Internet is of great significance. Despite the institutional advertising component of the Internet, it is still a very aggressive direct response medium. You read something, you're asked to make a purchase decision, and hopefully a transaction is conducted immediately. Knowing that, what I've discovered is that a key to any market, but particularly in direct response, is pricing strategy. And of all the areas that I've researched, this is the area where companies engage in the most guesswork. Certainly in unique products or areas where pricing has not been or become a commodity because of the principles of microeconomics. In reality, and again, and I'm not reading this from my notes, I just want to lay out something that I think is critical for you to understand. Time and time again, I have been in the offices of some of the largest companies in the world, and I've often talked to smaller vendors and asked them how they arrived at the pricing structure that they've chosen. And time and time again, I've been shocked to discover that someone just had a meeting and decided that's what the price ought to be, or someone, you know, shopped around the net a few times and saw what the competitors were offering, and so they essentially tried to come in a few points less. Now, if you're in an extremely competitive market, you probably have a lot more intelligence about what pricing can be. But for most of us that are out there, the reason you've survived thus far is to some degree you have a value proposition, and that means to some degree you have a unique component to your offering. And if you have a unique component to your offering, and that's reflected in the way you price it. Question is, how do you get it right? And this has been mostly alchemy, mostly guesswork. And I would like to kind of help you see and learn from tests that we've done in the past. And so with that in mind, we're going to be looking primarily at 3 points, which we'll kind of get into as things unfold. But I'd like to begin by drilling down on the first experiment. Now, for those of you that have heard me speak 2 years ago in New York on this subject, I used a portion of the test I'm going to show you now, but I'm using it really as a preliminary to a bunch of new experiments that we've just finished conducting. Most of you probably not heard this information, but in any event, it began when we worked with a leading psychiatrist and author to determine how to maximize the online sales of this newly published book. And there were 3 price points that we tested. Brian, do you have the URL ready for that site?
I do. That would be URL number 2 in the notes.
If you'd like to go to URL number 2, and I'll tell you something, one of my team members who's on the line right now, if you could slip back into my conference area and pull that up for me, I would appreciate it. I need someone to pull up that site. At the last minute, we decided to let you look at the website. Often we can't show you these websites because we're dealing with viable businesses, and for confidentiality reasons, we can't take you there. In this case, we decided that we can, and so what we wanted to do was kind of let you take a peek at it. So if my staff will help me, and they're doing that now, I want to continue by pointing out that there were 3 price points we tested, $7.95, $14, and $24. Which price point would be best? Which price point would yield the most revenue? Now, before you answer that, in my lecture in New York, I polled the audience, and I asked them to try and help me get that answer. And I asked them to kind of, basically like we've done in some of our conferences here, we presented them all 3 price points, showed them the product, and got their input. As you've seen in some of the conferences here, this audience of really very, very sharp marketing experts from some of the largest publishing groups in the world, for the most part, chose the wrong number. And so let me show you what the right number is and what we discovered in our testing. And to answer the question, we conducted a 3-day, that's all it was, pricing test. We drove a large volume of traffic so that we could get statistical significance to our site using just 5 search terms in Google AdWords. And using an ABC split test, we eventually distributed this traffic to 3 pages showing different pricing information. And Brian is going to put now in your notes the preliminary information from that initial microtest. Here are the results. You should be able, if you hit the refresh button on your page, you should be able to see those results. And take me to URL 2 if you would. And what you need to understand, and if you'll just look across the top, there's the $7.95, there's the number of orders under each one of these, and there is the revenue generated for each price point. $7.95, there were 390 orders. And at 14, there was 480 orders. So you might think that 14 is the best price. Fascinating that the price nearly doubled, but the number of orders went up. At $24.95, there were 300. Interesting, good. And so what you need to understand, based on the number of orders, it appears that the $7.95 price point was perceived as a lesser value, and it appears that the $24.95 price point was too high. But because of the larger price point, the $24.95 offer actually generated the most revenue. Now, I want to talk about something that we may want to add to the notes for this conference, but let me just point out for you that it may well be that on the surface, the $480 price, 480 orders at $14, is not as attractive as the 300 orders, because the one yielded $6,720 while the other yielded $7,485. But in actuality, the real issue is, what is the average value of a customer? And in truth, it might be for this person, depending on what that average value is projected, would do better to achieve 480 orders at $6,700 as opposed to 300 orders at $7,400. In fact, I'll go a step further and tell you, if I was making the decision, I would absolutely consider the $14 or the $14 price point. Now, I'll tell you why beyond that, and please keep this in mind strategically. It's not just the amount of money, but it's the number of customers. Because in the end, if you're an author, it's how many people you can influence that should help you make the best decision. In the end, and not just as an author, but many of you, your business is dependent upon the level of influence that you have. And the greater your influence, the more revenue opportunities you will have. So you don't have to remain, it's up to you. So with that in mind, from an economic standpoint, on the surface, clearly $24.95 is the best price point. Over the long haul, I would bet you the $14 may turn out to be the best price point. But in either case, it's key to recognize that for physical products, profit margin should always be taken into account. But for subscription-based services, this is less of an issue. However, marketing costs should always be taken into account. In our next experiment, we had to try and weigh the pay-per-click marketing costs against the revenue generated. Now, this next experiment is fresh and unique because here we had a product that was successful from day one. It rapidly grew by hundreds of percentile every single month. And during its initial six-month run, it exceeded everyone's expectations. And because of that, it was easy for the management to feel that they had got the price guess right. Clearly, the guess was intuitive, but yet it was an emphatic guess. At this point, when we began this test, the product was wildly successful, and it would have been easy not to even, you know, consider a new price because of its success. But experience suggested that, wow, if we got this much money this easy, I wonder if we could get a little bit more money without any dramatic impact. It's kind of the same feeling you have if you're getting ready to, say, buy a car and you offer someone $20,000 and they say it's a deal. Inside, you're glad, and at the same time, many of us wince, thinking, wow, that was so easy. I wonder if I could have got away with offering $18,000. Here, the price point initially was just a flat $10 per month. And this subscription offering at $10 per month made everyone question, because of the ease at which the orders were taking place in terms of overall conversion, if, you know, an additional $12.50 a month would impact things dramatically. And why not $12.50 a month? How about $14.95? Now, it's true that $14.95 is 50% higher than $10, but in the world of that we live in, it's not only the 50% ratio, but it's the amount of money. It's the addition. It's essentially the price of a cup of a Starbucks coffee. A cheap coffee. I don't know if you can buy one at Starbucks for that. So the question that it left you with is, you know, will the product sustain this increase? Now, most importantly, you've got to understand the nature of the product. The product, by the way, huge portions of this product go back into nonprofit activity. But if you'll look at the product, it's going to be link number 3, I believe, in your notes. So it's important to see the product, and I'm going to be talking about it in a cavalier way, though I have to say that the company that runs this is concerned about the safety of children, and their concern is not just about making money, and they're really quite genuine. But I'm having to look at it from a number standpoint, because very candidly, though it's successful, it's also very costly to market and provide the information and deliver it with the quality that these guys are doing it. They're doing much more than free services. So looking at that, they could certainly use more revenue in order to help more people, and it makes sense to consider the $14.95, but most importantly, this is link number 3, When you look at it, you consider it's a child's safety that's at stake here. What's the difference between $10 and $14? Minimal, at least, you know, that's what we would expect. So let's see how it tests. And to do that, I'm going to ask Brian to drop in the next chart. As Brian drops in that chart, you should notice that there's the three price points. And then the number of orders. So I think, incidentally, just to my team, I'd like to clarify that those subtotals on 29, 30, 31, and June 1 are order numbers, and we need to do that in the construction of the chart. I think it'll make it a little clearer. But if you'll look here, you'll see that the $10 price point scored 156 by asking for $2.50 more. The orders dropped to 94. And at $14.95, they dropped to 74. What you need to understand is the $10 price point generated 33% more revenue than the next basic price point. Now, that's the difference between make or break if you consider marketing costs and pay-per-click in many cases. And it's a significant finding. And I want to point out something to you that I think is critical here also. And that is, tests will run rather painlessly over a short period of time. And when the tests were done, the results indicated that the price point, the original price point of $10 was optimal. Now, many of us had not been trained to think properly about that. Some of us would come back and say, well, the other price, you know, the test failed. The test only fails if the test doesn't give you data. The goal of a test in itself is not to produce income, it's to produce data. You then use the data to produce income. Now, if you don't get that subtle difference, you're not going to have the testing mindset, neither will your management team. It's wonderful to run this test and discover that you've made the right choice. It's wonderful because it eliminates speculation, and it's wonderful because in order to eliminate later concerns that while you did well, you could have done much better had you come in with a different price point. So I'm not in the least bit concerned that the price point originally chosen in this test proved to be the best price. I'm just relieved to know that's the case, and confident that I won't have to look back and say, well, we could have done better, but we did. I just point that out to you because MEC is, you know, built around a micro-testing concept, and you'll notice that the number of orders is relatively small. This is a product that yields hundreds of orders per day, and it was possible with a very small micro-test to get enough statistical significance to make an important discovery. And so that's how we do it. We want to kind of help you, not just in these conferences and in our reports. It's not just a matter of communicating information to you, but there's a philosophy of doing business we'd like to communicate to you. There's a philosophy of marketing and the way you communicate to your audience in a transparent way that we talked about in the way you write your copy and so on. We want to help you think differently about marketing if we can, and that's why you'll find me going back and talking about some of these things. So here is another issue. We saw that the $10 price point was superior, but we yet wanted to analyze the impact of this as related to pay-per-click. Because there are multiple factors that impact whether the price is right, and one of them is at the cost. And believe it or not, some price points require or change your cost. For instance, if you're working in a product where at a certain level of units sold, your price is X, and at a higher level of units sold, your price is Y, then price might be determined by getting you into that higher margin. You might lower your price to increase your profit, which would be the result of increased sales. In this case, we analyze the ROI, and there's a new chart that should be placed in your notes, so you may want to refresh your notes. Now, I may be raising questions, and let me just point out for you that I'm going to be stopping here in a few moments and allowing you to ask questions. And so stand by and be prepared for that. But if you'll look in your notes right now, you'll see what the pure profit was on each of these. And that's based on the total clicks and the average cost per click at 9 cents, the associated marketing cost, and the revenue. Now, what's critical here is while average CPC remained the same, the number of clicks in itself remained the same, but revenue was dramatically different at the price points. Total profit on the $10 is not just a function, it's, you know, nearly double. Key is what, while the pay-per-click campaign remained profitable at all three price points, the ROI generated on the $10 price point was more than double that of the next best price. Now, ROI is one thing, but you might want to have a lower profit margin if you can sell more units, and that's why there's a need to look at both of these charts, because you've got to consider this from both standpoints. If indeed you were able to sell three times as many units at a lower price point, then even if your margins were less, it might be worthwhile. That's the key. When ROI is, by the way, if you're getting lost, if I'm scaring you with the math, we've built a spreadsheet tool that we're going to help you with before this is over with that'll simplify all of this. And when ROI is calculated, it becomes even more obvious that the $10 price point is significantly better than the more expensive prices. And these numbers do not take into consideration recurring revenue. Now, I've got Aaron on the phone, and I've got Nick on the phone, and this product also had a recurring revenue piece. That is, in addition to the one-time price, you could sign up for an inexpensive monthly, for a small monthly charge, you could sign up for more data. You can see that on the site itself. And I'm going to let Aaron and Nick just explain this next chart that we're getting ready to show you, because we wanted to analyze the impact of price point over the average value of a customer. So whichever one of you feels like you should jump in on this, please be my guest.
Sure, I can do that. This is Aaron. Essentially, what you're seeing here is projected revenue. Given the average retention we had seen, typical average retention had been 4.5 months. That was the average up until the point at which the test was conducted. Here we have included for you information as if those members who opted in for the 495 were retained for 1 month, for 4.5 months, for 6 months. And as you can see, based on these retention numbers, the $10 price point was even more valuable to us. The $10 price point generated 32.8% more revenue than the next best price point, the $12.50 price point. So how, because of the increased retention, the $10 price point was really the biggest winner as opposed to either the other price point that we had tested. So it really set apart the put the test in perspective.
And then essentially it was 32.8% better before you added in the recurring revenue piece, but when you calculated prices back with the recurring revenue piece, what Aaron is saying is that it actually was an improvement of 77% over the second price. So, I mean, that nearly doubles the impact of the test. Nick, is there anything you would add to that?
I was just going to add, and it goes back to your point about pricing the book originally, and the emphasis on the number of buyers so you expand your influence. And I think certainly on something like this where you have a subscription, the longer someone subscribes, the more likely they are to tell more and more people about your service. So in all these things, you think in terms of the benefit of retaining the largest number of people, of keeping the largest audience's attention as you can for as long as you can, because that number will always help you in terms of pass along referrals, word of mouth.
Very true, Nick. And for those of you that may not be familiar, Nick is Nick Osborne. Osborne is the Nick. Am I saying the last name right? It's terrible when I do that to you, friend.
Osborne.
It is Osborne. All right. Nick is in charge of all of our research related to copywriting, and is very, very involved with things that we're doing here. And he's joined us from Canada. He works full-time with our group, helping us sort those portions out of our research. And Aaron Rosenthal he ran all of this testing, but he's also really a senior analyst with his core skill here is analysis, particularly when it comes to ROI. He's also an expert in pay-per-click, and he oversaw this this whole test and actually conceived of it. So what I'm going to do is point out a couple of key things and then open the lines for questions and then begin to drill down on some guidelines for how to do this right when you're conducting price tests. I'm going to have Nick be prepared to kind of help me move through these key points in just a moment. And Bob Kemper's on the line. Bob is going to help us with a tool that we've developed for you in just a moment. But before Bob joins or helps us with that, may I have Brian get ready to take us off lecture mode. Now, if you have noise in your background, other conversations going on or anything like that, you can mute your phone after we take it off lecture mode by pressing *6. That way the background noise won't interfere. When you express your question, if you would just say your first name and start your question, and I'll call a name so we can get going.
Dr. Bedoffin, before we do that, this is Bob Kemper. May I intercede one comment?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
I want to invite people, because we're going to be going through the tool. I'm going to take you through a brief tour of the tool. I want to invite you to download the tool by right-clicking on URL number 5, link number 5, and doing Save Target As while we're going through the next several minutes and taking questions. I want you to invite you to download the tool so that you can follow on, that you can open the tool and we can get started right away.
So you want to save that tool to your own computer so that you can open it as Bob explains its use for you. And with that in mind, what I'm going to do also is go ahead and remind you as we take off this lecture mode, if you've got background noise, go to *6, and you can hit *6 again to take it off mute. Also, let me call your name, and then just as you identify your name and start your question, if more than one is talking at the same time, I'll just call your name and we'll go and do the best we can to answer you. All right, so let's go ahead. Let's take it off lecture mode. And someone go ahead and shoot a question at us.
This is Mark Harnett talking.
Go ahead, Mark.
Question about your initial pricing is pretty straightforward. I understand that. Did you do any further tests on the $4.95 monthly subscription rate? And did the $10, $12, and $14.95 prices have an effect, or were you able to see whether they had effect in how long people stayed in their subscription, their retention?
We are testing retention. We're in the midst of that testing now. And additionally, Mark, we felt like we should be testing a lower price than 10. So we've either done it or lined up the test prices like $7.95 as opposed to the $10 price, and $8.50, because there may be more revenue generated, particularly when you consider the long-term value. At a price point of less than 10, that would be the next round of tests.
Those are the initial prices. What about the follow-on monthly price? Are you testing that?
I don't know, Aaron. Are we testing that? I think he's on mute, and it takes him a moment to get it off. But I will tell you. Go ahead, Aaron.
Oh,
we've tested it. I believe we tested a $295 price point at which the $495 outperformed the $295. Now the $495 actually, as I recall, the $495 test very similar. The orders did not vary much. However, the revenue generated did. So it was at that time decided that it would move forward with the $495 test. As for the lower price point test, is ongoing. I believe there's been one other test that's been done at $7.50. However, that test was inconclusive. Basically, the $7.50 test versus the $10 test were performed nearly identical. So we've got another price test that's ongoing right now.
Interesting. Thank you. All right, another question.
Hi, this is Sean.
Yeah, Sean.
I apologize for coming in late. So I'll just throw these things out there, though. Is what you're finding different in a business-to-business setting where your price points are naturally going, naturally going to be higher, but are often higher than a sort of consumer product or service? And also, if it's possible, because I think I have a fairly sophisticated understanding, but could someone in 10 seconds tell me what you found here?
What we found here? I'm not sure of that second part. What we found.
Meaning, what's the primary thrust of your results in this session that you're reviewing?
Well, the whole goal of this session that we're going over right now is a series of experiments wherein we tested to find what's the optimum pricing structure.
Mm-hmm.
And in the next section, we're going to actually lay out insights that we gleaned from the tests as we conducted them. As to the first part of your question, I would point out that in general, I don't think there's a specific difference in terms of principal application when it comes to B2B or B2C. In reality, whenever you're dealing with market-driven economics, it's a question of figuring out what it's worth to the market, and that's why you have to test. And also, I would suggest for you that in most cases, you don't really know if your product is at the right price until you've tried to charge too much for it.
Uh-huh.
Once you've done that, you get an idea, you finally cross the line and you can back up to the price that's proper. And all in all, that's been our experience in the whole thing. So, with that in mind, I'd like to do this. If you've got more questions, we'll let you email those to us. I know there's several hundred of you registered for this conference today. And you can email our support with those questions, and we'll also probably take questions one more time here a little bit later. What I'd like to do now is talk about a tool that would help you sort through the math and figure out if pricing is right. And to do that, Bob Kemper, who is in management here in our group and who is an MBA and kind of an expert in this type of analysis, is going to help you understand a spreadsheet tool that we have built for you, which you can download and utilize as you conduct your own testing. So Bob, try to, because of timing, be as succinct as possible, friend, but go ahead and lay out for them what they need to know with this spreadsheet.
Very good. Thank you. There are a couple, as you open the spreadsheet and go through, there are multiple tabs, and we're going to be focusing on the first one. The other tabs are related to related topics. The second and third tabs are from prior briefs. They were enough related to this that I thought it proper to include them here. In the first tab called Price Testing Eval Worksheet, the intent is to help you to take what we've done in these tests and apply it to your business. when we look at the numbers, we have the luxury of some pretty sophisticated testing tools, and so we can do ABC tests. We can do multivariate tests here, and we have the luxury of having the clicks be identical and the time period test being identical. If you don't have those tools, we wanted to have you use your test results just the same. If you have to do a serial test where you test one price point for a period and then stop that and test another price point, possibly for the same period of time, possibly for a different one, we wanted you to be able to still use these concepts, and that's what this tool is for. So if you're on the tab, you'll notice that I've put in price points 1 and 2 from test number 2, table 3, the $10 and the $12.50 price points. The total clicks were identical because we were serving pages in round robin. The CPC was the same, and so on. So you'll see that the nominal gross profit is the same as in the table, $751.98 at the $10 price point, $366.98 at the $12.50. So $10 was again produced a nominal ROI, that is during the test. It was an ROI of 93.1% and 45.4% for the $12.50 price point. However, if you were to
stop you, Bob,
go ahead.
I just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page and following with you. There's three tabs. Let me just make sure for everybody. You're on the free trial prop. Which tab are you on?
On the price testing eval worksheet, which is the one it opens to.
Okay.
The cursor starts in cell B20. By the way, all of the yellow cells are data entry cells. It's in the usage notes. They're ones that data entry is there for, and the green and the gray cells are ones that are auto-computed. They're formulaic.
Okay, excellent.
Okay.
All right, I'll assume everybody's on the right page with that. And the thing is, let's just make sure, let's take off feedback, right? Let's take off lecture mode so that as Bob's talking, people can interact with questions, right?
Okay. Okay. First, I'll ask very quickly: has anyone had any difficulty in downloading the spreadsheet or opening it?
No.
Okay.
Okay. Then, if I may, I'll proceed from where I left off. The test results from price points 1 and 2, the 10 and 12.50, are pre-populated there. You can change those. I'm sorry?
I have a totally different spreadsheet. I have no clue where you are.
I do too, Bob.
Okay. Do you have a tab called Price Testing Eval Worksheet on the far left?
No, huh?
I was able to open it fine. You need to click the move left on the tab.
What's
to see that
name of your file? Pre-trial Profit Calculator, first tab.
There's a tab to the left.
Yeah, you want to click on the little arrows at the left bottom to
slide it over to the left.
Expose the first tab.
Oh, I may.
Yes. Yes. What you're seeing is the right spreadsheet, but what you're not seeing is the right tab because there are so many in this sheet that Bob built. At the very bottom of the Excel spreadsheet, if you click the arrow, it'll expose more tabs. And click on the first tab.
Got it, 100%. Thank you.
Okay.
So I apologize. I thought it was opening on that tab, so I apologize.
No problem. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay. So it should, when you click on the tab, should open to cell B20, which is the $10 price point. And all of the yellow cells, once again, are data entry cells. So let's say that there are two key purposes for this sheet: to be able to extend from the pure testing realm into value for your business and for decision making on price points. One is we focused on the pure test results because once again we had the luxury of consistency on the testing period and number of clicks, and that, so we were able to normalize out for that and identify the what are called here nominal gross profit. We can translate directly into profit for the company. If you don't have that, this tool is intended to be to allow you to do your testing in whatever way and give you the flexibility to still do decision making. So let's say that you did a serial test. First you did a 4-day test at the $10 price point, and let's say you did a 3-day test on the $12.50 price point. So just change cell C29. If you look, the you generated $11,700 before you do that. Our test results were $11,700 in computed monthly revenue and $8,800 in computed monthly revenue at $12.50. Let's say you were able to generate 94 sales in 3 days instead of four. So if you change cell C29 to 3 and hit enter, you'll notice that the revenue it kind of flip-flops the computed monthly revenue. It goes from $8,000 suddenly it goes to $11,750. So that allows you to have non-equal periods in your testing in case you don't have the A/B testing capability.
If I may. Just to add this to you, that this, if at first this seems overwhelming, you know, Bob has done a remarkable job with this tool, and if it seems overwhelming, just bear in mind that all you have to do is get these yellow fields correct, and everything else will calculate for you, and you have the option or the luxury of changing the yellow fields. And the thing that Bob just pointed out for you that's so important is if you can't A/B split test, then you may have to sequential test for 3 days or test for 4 days, and back-to-back, and with that simply changing the test period here or changing some of these fields in yellow, even without fancy test tools, you should be able to take your basic site metrics and get a result that you can understand and interpret for decision-making. Bob, can I ask you to do this? The free trial profit calculator and the subscription ROI calculator, how do those connect? Tell us each of these tabs. Give us an overview of what the tabs themselves are for, if you would.
Okay, the free trial profit calculator and the subscription ROI calculator are intended, and by the way, these are repeats are also available have been used in prior briefs. Free trial profit calculator is intended to allow you to evaluate the impact of offering a free trial with different terms and conditions. If you click on the second tab, you'll notice that there are steps 1 and 2. First thing is you enter your subscription specifics, and when you fill in all of the information in the yellow tabs, once again, the nomenclature is similar. Yellow is for data entry, and green and gray and other colors are computed. So you fill in the specifics with different terms and conditions for a free trial, and the bottom part computes, with and without a free trial, how the performance is by offering a free trial and by not.
Now, the subscription ROI calculator, Bob, give us a paragraph on that.
Okay. For the subscription ROI calculator, it's intended to allow you to enter specifics about, what's your monthly advertising budget, what is your experience in terms of the average cost per visit. These are all things that should be available to you. If you have a subscription business, these things are available to you through your testing tools or through your corporate books. You should have an idea of what your conversion rate is from free membership to initial visit and the other items in yellow. So you look at your data, enter those fields, and it allows you to do a what-if analysis. What if my, if I were able to you get a 60% conversion. What would happen to to my total monthly revenue? What if I were able to make specific changes? What kind of impact would that have for me?
What if I change my subscription amount? Yeah, what if I change the cost of subscription, for instance? And a lot of this, if I may point out, the subscription ROI calculator kind of helps you figure out information you might need to do the initial price test. For instance, what is the net profit per subscriber? Or what is, those are key numbers that may help you. And you don't need to use every one of these tabs, but they're really valuable tools for those of you that have a need and take the time to understand them. The demand curves, Bob, you want to point out that?
Actually, demand curves, I think for the purpose, there's one other item that I want to tell you, a really important aspect of the first tab that I want to cover
right
in the interest of
time.
The demand curves are more academic. And therefore, again, I wanted to provide for our readership the opportunity to do the kinds of things we do internally and provide some of those tools. The yellow, once again, if you enter your actual data, those demand curves from a microeconomic standpoint allow you to see price elasticity of demand. And if that's a familiar concept for you, this will be a useful tool. If it's not, then you can ignore it, because really the first tab offers you what I think are the important aspects of decision making in terms of pricing.
Excellent. Excellent.
So go ahead. On the first tab, there was one other item I wanted to cover of real importance, and that is that when you want to translate what the test itself doesn't do for you, is to identify what your true ROI is. It's, you have a test nominal ROI based on just pure advertising costs. Pure PPC is really all that's included there. And I wanted to provide you the opportunity to include some of your other costs. So at the top, in rows 8 through 14, there is a section up there where you can identify some other costs of your business. And if you go to cell B9 under cost of goods, let's say that you have a hosted site or server licenses or some fixed costs where you have a fixed monthly cost. Let's say you had a fixed cost of $500. Which I'm entering into cell B8. And those are costs that you incur every month regardless of your volume. So you have some variable costs associated with the actual product itself, either in production if it's a physical product, or possibly data entry for someone to actually enter an order if it's a telephone order. So you have a 50 cent per order fixed cost of goods, which means actually producing the product. You can enter those there. Presumably, under most circumstances, it's going to be the same before and after. So by default, the cell C falls to the same value. You can overtype it. And then under advertising costs, the monthly fixed fees, you may have a subscription, or you may have marketplace costs that are fixed. You can enter those. And the bottom line is, by default, those are empty. But if you have those, it allows you to compute the actual impact on your business. You notice we went from a before picture of $11,000 down to about $4,000. So,
Excellent. For those of you that want to analyze these test numbers and get a really solid set of decision tools, Bob's really done a remarkable job of putting this together. And if you have questions about it, just email us. We'll do our best to try and help you. We get a lot of emails, but please don't be afraid to send us a note. We'll do our best to try and help you understand it. What I would like to do is take the balance of our time and drill down on some real practical components of testing that connect to what Bob has just shown us, and that is, how do you do this right? And I'm going to get Nick to help us as we move through some of these. there's basically five keys we want to go over with you in our remaining moments. And Nick, let me let you, I may jump in with a thought or two, but let me let you go ahead and take over this section.
Okay, thank you. And Brian, if you can just drop in the guidelines one by one as I go through, so if you can drop in number one on the notes page. So if everyone refreshes their notes page, shortly we should see guideline number one. And these are all points that may have jumped to mind as your own mind as we went through the findings. This first one is looking a little bit at some of the questions we opened this whole session asking ourselves, you know, do we know what the price is? And the answer really is no unless you test. But in this first guideline, if you're selling a physical product, one of the first things you can do is actually just find out what your competitors are doing. Because a lot of the time, you can get that sort of guideline. And one of the things we've added to this guideline number one is a URL for pricegrabber.com. Because one of the wonderful things about the online world, of course, is that consumers can do an automatic price comparison, and we can do the same to see exactly what the market is doing and what people are expecting. There are some other things in terms of the price of a physical product to consider, and that is the added value that your prospects might perceive. So you may be selling the same widget as 10 other people, but you can add value to that in all kinds of different ways, and it may be to do with your reputation and standing in the industry. It may be to do with issues of trust, your service, your warranty, your customer service. There are all kinds of ways. So finding a price, even on a physical product where the market is fairly clear what the value should be, is elastic, and you can change that price according to, you know, the value people perceive. Certainly use tools like Price Grabber to find out what other people are charging. So Brian, if you can jump into number two, put in the second guideline there. And everyone, if you refresh, you should see number two in a moment. If you're selling a service or a subscription, then it becomes actually much harder to determine what exactly is the correct price point because perception of that value plays a huge part in it. And again, it's, as Dr. McLaughlin was saying, it's a factor of influence, it's a factor of reputation. I know with a lot of virtual goods and soft goods like e-books, you know, the addition of bonuses. And so when you're testing prices, you should really look at quite a variety. It's interesting. I find it very interesting in that first example we looked at today where we looked at a book, which is actually a physical product, and this is contradicts in a way what I'm saying. The price differences tested there were enormous. And I think one of the things that we tend to do, even when we test, is perhaps be too cautious. We test prices that are a little bit higher and a little bit lower. And that may be a smart thing to do later on, but to begin with, I would recommend, you know, test some crazy prices and use Bob Kemper's spreadsheet tool to find out what the final return on investment there.
You're absolutely right. That's a very good point, Nick.
I found that first one fascinating. You know, from 7 something to 24 something, it's such a huge difference. The other point I was going to jump in fact, on that book thing, is that in part when executives sit around tables and they guess at prices, I think a lot of their experience and knowledge and expertise is still coming from the offline world. And I think perception of prices can be different in the online world. In fact, perhaps Amazon is perhaps the company that's best demonstrated that. The pricing online can shift dramatically compared to what offline expectations are. That's a separate point. Okay, Brian, if you can drop in number three, and this is a point that Dr. McLaughlin has already mentioned. In fact, I would say it's probably one of his favorite points when it comes to price testing. And that is that when you're testing, push the ceiling. Keep pushing the price up until it is clearly too expensive. Because then at least you know you have one fixed mark where you know you've gone too high, and the remaining work you have to do is to find out what price beneath that is going to be the best price and give you the best revenue. On to number four, Brian. And this is really an issue of A-B split testing, or as Bob Kemper said, maybe you need to do sequential testing. Is that you need to do this well. Often people will, I think, test prices. In fact, they'll test everything, and they'll start testing at 9 o'clock, and by 12 o'clock that morning, 3 hours later, they'll see a really interesting result, and they'll stop. I don't think that's how, and Dr. McLaughlin can disagree, though I don't think he will. That's not the way to do it. You really have to be thorough in your testing. If you're testing something on a price, and as we've seen from some of the figures, a change in price can have such an extraordinary impact on your revenue, particularly when you look at subscriptions, particularly when you consider lifetime value of customers, particularly when you consider the benefits of word of mouth. You need to do this testing very thoroughly, very carefully. Use Bob Kemper's tool and make sure you run your tests for long enough.
Long enough to get a statistic. Some people in an hour will have enough data to test their price because of the hundreds upon hundreds of orders that come in. Most of us jump the gun and make a decision before we have a strong enough data set to know it's right. I think Nick is absolutely right.
Well, and the other point I'll make there is like if you do have huge numbers and you do have statistically significant figures after an hour, be careful. You know, maybe a huge story broke on CNN.
Absolutely.
You started your test.
Absolutely.
So that's another cautionary point about even if you have high numbers, being careful how you're testing because there can be outside influences.
And also, most of us, and this goes back to the point he made, Nick made above this, I think it's point three. It's not just, most of us test our price up, but we don't test our price down. You know, we're already making money at this number. It'd be a horrific thought to actually lower our price and test it because we don't want to lose money. But in reality, some of us would make more money by lowering our price. And why we may have
and
a
as you said earlier, acquire more customers.
Yes, because you acquire more customers and you, you know, again, in microeconomics, it all comes down to which price point yields the most overall revenue. And so our propensity is to see what we can get away with by increasing our price. But good price testing always considers a variable in the opposite direction. And if you're looking for a statistical standard, consider moving 50% in both directions. 50% higher, 50% lower as a nice introductory mode to lots of offers where you're shooting in the dark and not sure how to structure those price points. And also, you may want to test the difference between $9.95 and $10, and $19.95 and $20. In certain situations, the flat price of $20 actually yields a higher trust factor. It sounds like you're not, it's an avoidance of sales language. On the other hand, we have seen it many times that 5 cent difference actually makes an increase, or you know, is a positive in certain types of products. And I'd go a step further and tell you that not only do you want to test price points from the standpoint of just the pure price, but once you get a price point that might have worked, that was close, that seems like it could have produced but didn't, like some we've seen here, see what you can add as a bonus. For instance, that $14.95 or price point that we moved away from with the NAR product that we looked at could actually, because of its massive impact on revenue, for more people to do that, that's a 50% increase in revenue with no new advertising costs. You might look at the differential between the number of people who didn't buy and those who did at 10 and ask yourself, what if I offered these three incentives? And you can actually now, we're moving from price testing to offer testing, but it connects. Essentially, if you can get close enough to a number that matters, you may find out that by gingerly moving what you actually put in your benefits, for instance, a free DVD that's added to that on child safety, et cetera, what you may find is that you enhance the perceived value, hit your target number. And by the way, for those of you who are wondering, well, is that cost effective? Well, it might be. It might be if your base cost on the DVD is duplication cost at $1.39, and you pull off a 50% increase. Now, you know, I'm just saying that I understand there's mailing costs and many other things. But the point I'm trying to make for you is, use the price testing as a doorway to enhancing your offer. And so, you know, first get your price to the baseline. And then when you know you're at the real baseline, now see how far you can move the baseline with, and this is the key, with incentives or bonuses that have high perceived value but low cost to you. That's when you're really getting scientific, guys, and that's when you're moving into a whole new level of precision when it comes to good merchant, you know, good merchandising. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, there's just one final point, number five, and Brian, if you can drop that in if it's not there yet. And that is, and this goes back to what Aaron has been doing with NAR, is you know, he ran one set of tests and found that $10 is the best price point. There is a temptation to then think to yourself, okay, we've tested that price and move on to other projects and never look at that again. I think part of, as Dr. McLaughlin says, the science of this is you want to schedule a time, whether it's 3 months or 6 months or 9 months later, where you challenge all that again. You challenge the basic test you did before because circumstances change, publicity changes. In fact, on the NAR side, just this morning, Oprah gave her first $50,000 prizes to two people who had helped identify registered sexual offenders. Would today's news have an impact? So always don't think you always have the right price forever. Go back and not only test, as Dr. McLaughlin says, adding incentives and bonuses and other variables to increase the perceived overall value, but also test what you tested before to make sure the circumstances, pricing, the market haven't changed.
The market conditions are fluid. And Nick is right, and let me just point out one thing that connects closely with that. And it's an example from something that we've been involved with in the last 7 days, and that is, here's a successful company who's is doing eight figures in revenue, and with a small product, they've grown from scratch in offices, and it's none of the products that we have in this test, so I wouldn't be able to tell you if this were the case. None of the products that we've identified today is my point. Bottom line is, they had a price point, very successful, earning lots of money with major margins, but a new competitor has emerged on the landscape who is basically offering such a rich deal to his affiliates that it's cutting into their affiliates because a large portion of their revenue is generated by their affiliate sales. So they come to us and say, what can we do? Because we were already running some tests with them. What we did is we used price points and tested a higher price point for them on their own product, and then by increasing their price point, we and then slightly increasing the affiliate payout, we saw we developed a way that their affiliates can make more money without cutting into the company's profits. Here's why. Number one, because the overall take is larger, the affiliate percentage is larger, and you know, the net money paid to the affiliate is larger, and then because we've increased the percentage paid to the affiliate slightly, what's happened is they've suddenly been able to defeat the competitive encroachment provided by this other party who was trying to basically undercut them. They did it all with smart price testing. And that's kind of an angle on everything we've talked about today. It shows you an application that you may find yourself, useful in thinking through for your own situation. Nick, do you have anybody from our team have anything else to add to this? Nick, you have anything to add?
No. I think we've covered quite a lot.
All right. Take us off lecture mode, Brian. Anybody else from my team? Bob, do you have any closing thoughts? Okay. All right. And I think Bob was coming off of mute. Are you free?
I was, and no, I'd be happy to take questions when that time.
Okay. All right. We're off lecture mode. I'd like to ask you a question and also invite you to ask a question. First of all, have we been too technical today? Is this information helpful for you? It's sometimes difficult to gauge what is the right level of information to provide for our audience, and we try to meet that need as best we can, but I'd love some feedback as to whether or not this has helped you or it's been too much for you, overwhelming?
This is Scott. It has not been overwhelming.
Excellent. I mean, and I don't mean to insult the audience at all. I just, you know, I just want to make sure that I'm we're gauging right, you know, what we need to give you to help you. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? Any other questions?
This is Pete.
I have a comment.
Go ahead, Pete.
Right at the correct level. It opened my eyes to a lot of things.
I appreciate that, Pete. I really do.
This is Wendy. I have a question.
Yes, Wendy.
On the second test, the $10, $12, and so forth, since that's a subscription that's an existing offer out there, how do we account for the pipeline being upset at the $12.50 and the $14.95 price point, since it's a four-day test? Is it possible that if we do this test for 30 days, that the $12.50 or even the $15 price point would actually become the more profitable price point?
Because of the pipeline not being upset, I think I follow
exactly.
You're saying other people
how do we take into account the pipeline being upset because the $10 price point was an existing price point and it was hugely popular? There's got to be a bunch of pipeline people that were aware of the $10 price point and therefore saw the $12.50 and was not going to bite.
Well, I think the way that we account for that is that each of the traffic stents were discrete traffic stents pulled out of one, each out of specific channels who were very unlikely to have seen the site before.
Oh, okay. So it is assumed that these traffic were generated from sources that were not there before.
That's right. We didn't just change the homepage.
These were new traffic.
Go ahead.
I got it.
Yeah, this
excellent.
Is Ed. I have a question.
Go ahead, Ed.
Let's assume you have a new product launch and you're really not sure what kind of conversion ratio you're going to get for a lifetime value of additional products. How would you proceed then? You know, you don't know whether or not to acquire a huge number of customers or a lower number of customers that may have a higher initial revenue.
Well, there's typically price testing like this takes place in stages, and what you're trying to achieve at is a probability, and if I have some type of market staff to draw from as a probability in terms of projections, I'll begin with that. I'll arrive at a price. 3 months later, I'll stage the second set of prices now that I have more secure numbers, and even the NAR test that we discussed, we truly don't know what retention is now. It's probably higher and longer than what we project, because the product is so new. So we'll run more tests, or we'll at least run retention impact against the tests we've already done once we have stronger retention numbers. The translation of that is there's some guesswork here, Brandon. What you want to try to do is get enough probabilities and then continue to refine as you get more hard data.
Would you begin with a very conservative probability then?
Yes, I would begin with a conservative probability as long as that was an even statistic, as long as that was a factor that was evenly applied to all of the points.
Very good. Thank you.
Yes.
This is Howard. I have a question.
Sir. Yes, Howard. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just curious. I just started, so an experiment for me. I just started with kind of like a graduated price point. In other words, I have a virtual informational product and service, and what I'm doing is I'm experimenting a little bit with like $9.95 and then a $99 product and then a $399 product where you can do a payment plan on the $399 product starting at $99.
Right.
And I just wondered if you've had any experience with that where you're actually, graduating people on the same language.
Yeah, I have. And in each case, it's really quite specific, but one of the things that is impacted by that most of all is if there's a pre-trial component, because it's very hard to ask people to do two things or make more than one decision. You can either get the upgrade after you've got them already committed to a lower level, or you can segment and show a different price point to a different channel that's coming in that you feel is more qualified for that price point. But I think you have to be very, very cautious at trying to do too many things on the same offer page. The moment we, now I'm not against offering somebody, you know, an annual deal, a 10 months and then 6 month deal and 3 months. We've seen that pump revenue up, but it's very tricky doing it right. And if you're not careful, you end up with too many moving pieces in your offer page. It can hurt conversion. So I would test the whole idea, not just three against each other, but I would test all three against one. Meaning if I've got an offer page that's offering you a graduated set of options, I test it against a single option offer page and see which one produced the highest revenue.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Any other impressions about that at all?
Well, that's off the top of my head. That's all I could tell you until I saw more as to what you had. You know, you may want to send something over to the support here, and we might be able to take a look at something for you.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
This is Roy Weissman. I have a question.
You're not allowed to ask questions, Roy.
Maybe I have a solution. I don't know what I got.
I know Roy, so he's a longtime friend. Go ahead, Roy.
So now, when you do these tests, so someone comes in on a landing page and they see a $12 price, but they don't necessarily buy and they write down the URL and now they go back to the website directly. So they saw a $12 price, they go back to the website directly, what price do they see?
Well, it depends on how you do it and depends on the length of your test and perhaps your market. But in most cases, you're sending a discrete set of traffic who is given from a single landing page and you're asking a decision to be made on the spot, and the statistical number of them who actually write down a different URL and come back later is small enough that I haven't seen it form a problem. And I'm running price tests with groups like Reuters who are very, very sensitive to, you know, very, very sensitive to anybody that might be aggravated with them, for instance.
Well, many times you'll implement a system that will allow you to place a cookie on that individual system so that when they go back, unless they've blown out their cash, they will receive that same,
that's right.
that same price point.
Okay. Well, that answered that one. Thank you.
All right.
Scott has a question.
Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, along those lines, there are some issues with regard to how people respond to price changes. And the response that you get to a price will be different whether, in the case of a subscription, they are renewing and versus whether they are adopting for the first time.
That's
so,
right.
So there's this notion of reference pricing. And I was wondering how you account for that in your experiments. I teach pricing, so this is an important issue that I cover a lot.
We're very involved in that right now with a major publisher in the U.S. who has 50 publications, and they're going through this right now. And I may need to answer your question, via email. But in general, the best way to deal with that issue is to segment a discrete member of your audience, and give them a sub offer. And if you're afraid that sub-offer might be passed around and thereby look unfair to another segment in the industry, you can, and I know this may at first blush skew results, but if you do it properly, you can do it without skewing results, you can offer some other slight enhancement that has some psychological justification for the price break or price differentiation. And essentially gain what I would say is not pure statistical data, but a strong probability. I couple this when I'm dealing with reference issues and I'm dealing with, say, resubscribers, there is absolutely no substitute. If I was a CEO of a company trying to decide this issue, I would literally, if there was any telephone work involved, I would literally get on the phone myself, answer calls or talk to people and place outbound calls to sense the market. What I don't trust, Scott, is most pricing surveys have people tell you what they want you to hear. Not, you know, the only time I really trust pricing data is when there's an action required. Because I found over and over again people tell you this is what I pay. When you get it to the real truth of asking them to pay for it, it's a different issue. But having said that, I love moving in the audience. That is moving among my the group that I'm testing and feeling from them what their feedback information is, and then constructing an offer for a discrete segment and seeing how they respond to it.
Okay, is there a way that I can follow up with you on this?
Sure, sure. Email us. They'll forward it. They'll get an email directly to me. If you send it to me directly, my filters might get it. But send it to support or editor, and we'll take a look at it. But I want to point out one more thing. When you're trying to get a discrete segment, you might literally go, for instance, to the first 100 subscribers or the XX and identify that subgroup within your list. And then do your price and let them know, identify why you're giving them this special offer. And sometimes that helps you also. I fear in this short time I can't answer you well enough, but if you get specific with a scenario, I'll try to help you with a clear answer. Okay? All right. If I could, I've said this in the past, but I really mean it. We go over every one. And anybody's feedback about this and whether or not it's been helpful for you, and anything we can do to make it helpful, please send us an email so that we can study your thoughts on this. Also, we'll be releasing a full report, which is in much more detail than everything we've said here in writing. That'll be a briefing that'll be released in about 24 months. I'm sorry, but that briefing will be released in about 14 days. And so you can look forward to receiving that, and also you'll be able to listen again to this conference, and you've already got the spreadsheet tool, and perhaps all of that together will help you a little bit as you think about pricing. I appreciate everyone visiting today, and we'll be back in about 2 weeks to talk with you again. Thank you.